Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. This is a podcast where we will discuss the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Ken Williams. The opinions, attitudes, thoughts, and ideas that we discuss are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily a reflection of the actual doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and enjoy this week's conversation.
And this week is going to be an interesting one because I have with us a favorite, fan favorite. It might just be me.
And who's the only fan? Favorite.
Personal favorite. Yes, yes, absolutely. Annette is back with us. So is my cat.
Cue the applause.
The cat. Do I have the applause button?
You should.
Yes, we have the applause. So welcome back, Annette.
Thank you.
So this is prompted by couple things that happened, and I'm not going to get into a lot of detail because the details don't matter, and the situations are weird enough that I don't want to. I don't want the weirdness of the situations to overshadow what I think are the core pieces of a conversation. So, does that make sense? As I'm being super vague here.
Makes perfect sense.
I had this great way of starting this off in my head. I think it's come back to me. So I got a message from somebody about a complex situation that I am not directly involved in, but I am aware of those that are involved and the parties that are interested. And the question was, well, don't you want to know the truth? And that got me thinking. Then, so think about that question. So there's a question. This is kind of how I'm going to set this up. Then there's a group that I'm in where there were some people that were kind of bouncing around ideas for podcast episodes. This was not for my podcast. This was for somebody else. And there was a bizarre story. It was a bizarre story. Latter-day Saint who had some experiences that were supernatural that he's convinced are because they're not contradicted by scripture, that they were true. Some visitations and some messages and advice and things like that. And I thought, kind of, if I superimpose those two situations, do I want to know the truth? And then, of course, there's a Bible scripture about the truth will make you free. That would be fantastic to know the truth. But then the question is, how do I know the truth? And now, I'm not sure if you know this, Annette, but I'm a coach.
Wait, what?
So I've been thinking about this from my coaching perspective, and when I'm working with somebody, we separate. We call it circumstances, but we separate the truth from not truth. There are things that I will say, you will say, that are not, I'll call it capital T truth. There are things that feel true, but they're maybe my experiences. So as an example, I'm a procrastinator, not true. That's in the model that I use, that's a thought. But I can find all sorts of evidence that I'm a procrastinator. If I look at my list of things that I need to get done today, I've done two things today. I have five more things on my list. And it's 4:21. So there's evidence that I'm a procrastinator. I'm not a people person, or I am a people person, or I'm a people pleaser. I'm all the things, the identity things that we tell ourselves. There are a lot of things like that where we talk about them like they're true. My kids are amazing, or my kids are troublemakers, or all the things. We speak those things like they're true. And then, oh, just because I haven't riled you up enough yet.
Oh, I'm riled.
Then a lot of times we throw in, especially, I'm not going to say especially, but no, I'm going to say especially as members of the church, of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where we have this idea that there is a truth, there is a one truth, and I'm not discounting that. I'm not saying that that's not the case, but we have this idea, and we believe that we have the lock on that. Then I'll hear people say things like, well, God told me I should. God told me I should open this business. God told me I should marry this person. God told me I should. So we add this element of, I'm just going to call it what it is, what I think it is, spiritual manipulation or a spiritual trump card. That how can I now, if Marcin comes in, for example, and she says, God told me that we should whatever. We should move. We should stay here. We should get a new car. We should sell the car. We should quit our jobs and go on missions, whatever it is. Now, can we even have a real conversation? Because she's gone to the ultimate authority and he's blessed it, at least in her mind. So how can I have a real, honest conversation? So now that I have spoken myself for 6 minutes, it's now your turn to respond, agree, of course, or disagree, probably not, or whatever else you want to say.
You're flushed. You're like all hot under the collar. This is awesome. Actually, it's interesting. When you were talking, I had this thought that has been the, maybe it's because it's been the topic of conversation with a couple of different of my friends over the last few weeks, mm-hmm. that this again brought it into mind, but I think it applies here as well. I listened to a podcast and I wish I could give a shout out credit of which one it was. It was probably Faith Matters.
Okay.
It could have been one of Andy Stanley's sermons.
Okay.
And it might have been something completely else entirely. But they were talking about sometimes in the church, especially, I don't know that it's necessarily specific to our faith tradition, but in our faith tradition, I can speak to that because I know that. We have kind of this top-down approach of the top authority has said this, mm-hmm. and that trickle down.
Right.
And not necessarily taking responsibility, accountability, initiative. I'm not really sure the right word there. For our own decisions or choices. And it's comfortable there.
Super comfortable.
It's so comfortable. And we've talked about this before, about like not wanting to get it wrong.
Right.
Right. And so, but when we're talking about this thing, you know, God told me to do this, God told me to do that, I think it removes our own personal authority.
Absolutely does.
And stepping into our personal authority, or the catchphrase I think right now is reclaiming your personal mm-hmm. authority, is very uncomfortable because we want to get it right.
Right.
And we live in this culture, this religious culture of fear of, if you don't get it right, then you are wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that. Like, if you're not worthy to do something, then you're unworthy, which I also mm-hmm. don't agree with that either. It might just simply mean you're not prepared.
True. I like that.
And so I think sometimes when I'm not going to go out as and be as bold to say God would never do that. I'm not going to speak to God's actions.
You're not going to speak for God.
I will not be speaking for any gods today.
Okay.
But I do think that sometimes we as human beings in our humanness mm-hmm. sometimes avoid our own personal authority out of fear of getting it wrong. And it's more comfortable to say you felt good about this thing. Like mm-hmm. maybe if you want to go far to the extreme, and I'm like, if you have any disagreements with this, please email me at ken@chocolatecake.com.
I will forward them directly to you.
Especially if you deal with like mental health issues, scrupulosity, any of those things, maybe you had an intrusive thought mm-hmm. and it was simply an intrusive thought.
Yeah.
And you, it made you uncomfortable to say, to challenge that intrusive thought. Sometimes I think, especially in a high demand religious organization, it's uncomfortable to challenge our thoughts mm-hmm. because of what we're taught about them. But maybe it's easier to just say, this is just one circumstance, one instance. That intrusive thought was God telling me to do something that maybe it made you uncomfortable. Maybe it's not about comfort, but challenging that thought uh-huh. makes us uncomfortable. Did I make any sense? Did I come full circle? Because I wanted to.
I have no idea. But you raised two things for me. Number one is when you talk about reclaiming authority, I like that. I like that. Can I call it a diatribe? Can I call that a rant? What is
I'm known for my rants, so go ahead.
But the question that popped into my head was, if we're reclaiming our authority, who are we reclaiming it from?
That is a great question. And I'm going to say, like, for me personally, as mm-hmm. I've gone on my own journey, I misplaced authority for my decisions in maybe church leadership. Mm-hmm. And believed that they had authority over me and the decisions that I made. Like somehow I needed permission mm-hmm. To do a thing or not do a thing that was going to be the best thing for me. Like, right. for example, here's a pretty innocuous example that I'm comfortable sharing. Shortly after my brain tumor, my brain surgery, as we were still not really sure, like, are these side effects and these things I'm experiencing a result of the seizure medication I was on that I was really struggling with, or was it a result of the actual damage to my brain as a result of having a tumor and surgery? Mm-hmm. And attending church in person was so difficult. Like, it was painful, physically painful. I would be very ill. Afterwards, I might be able to not get out of the bed. Mm-hmm. It was unsafe for me to drive. Like, I was experiencing all these things. And I remember talking with Barry and just being like, is it okay if I don't come? Is it okay if I go home for a second hour? Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I had the authority to say, I can't do this.
Right.
I felt like I needed permission from somebody who had, like, now in our church, we do have a patriarchy organization. Mm-hmm. So not only was Barry my husband, he also held the priesthood. He was also in the bishopric. And culturally at the time, I believed he did have authority about some of those things that I didn't have. And really, like, as in hindsight, when I look back, I wanted him to, like, bless me mm-hmm. that I would be not punished for that decision. I right. wasn't making it because I was lazy. And I know that it could be interpreted that way. Like, oh, she just is lazy and she doesn't want to come here. She would rather go here and do this other thing. And so I felt like I needed somebody who knew my heart mm-hmm. to also give me permission. That's not really the right thing, but I don't have better words.
Yeah.
And so, like, reclaiming my authority might now look like me saying, I can't do this anymore. I've mm-hmm. given it a lot of thought. I've tried every possible way. I've been working at this for years, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm right with God. Like, God, are we good? Yep. All right, cool. I'm stepping back and I'm not going to do that thing anymore. I'm not going to do that thing anymore, or I'm going to remove myself from this situation. And being able to say that without having to go up the chain of real or imagined authority. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm still, you did a great job of saying a lot of things without answering my question, because there may not be an answer to the question.
I totally answered your question. I think you just weren't listening.
I was super listening. The question of if we're reclaiming our authority, who are we reclaiming it from?
Well, I did answer that. I said, I think we've given it to people who are in authority.
So,
over us,
but our church. So here's my rebuttal to your defensive position that you answered my question. I think you gave me an answer, but I don't know that you answered the question.
Ooh.
So let's talk about agency for a minute.
Okay.
So we talked I think it was last week when we talked about decisions and making decisions, and are we asking God because we want his permission or because we want him to make the decision for us? I think at least culturally in the church, we have a good feel for how God feels about agency, and he will not violate our agency. So if I am, quote, reclaiming my authority, it's certainly not from God. I didn't give it up to God. So I have a thought that I'll throw out, and you tell me that I'm wrong or that I'm right. So I just imagine that we put our authority down, that nobody has it. I think there's some entities that want it. There are some entities that will probably behave as if they have it. And that could be political, that could be religious, it could be social. But I think agency, and I'm just making stuff up as I go along. I think our agency is so precious a thing that nobody can take it from us. I think we can give it up by the choices that we make. And I don't know if that's... Can somebody take agency that you're not using?
Ooh, what do you mean by that?
So, and I'm imagining the visual of I have agency, the opportunity to make a decision, and I set it down. I'm not comfortable making a decision. I'm not confident that I am capable of making a wise decision, which I think a lot of times that's what this all comes down to. Am I competent to make a decision? The answer is yes. You may need information, but you don't need all the information because there's no way to get all the information. The information is always changing. There's new information that's being added. There's information that's being disproven, etc. We are going to come back to, we will make it full circle, I promise.
I'm here for this ride.
I don't know. Does anybody even... get bothered by the tangential wanderings that they're entertaining for me.
I would love to hear if anybody comments on that.
So let me know. Let me know if you are entertained by it, if you're irritated by it, whatever. Nothing will change, but but I imagine that so if I'm setting down my agency, my ability to choose. That's one of the most powerful things that we have, is our ability to choose, maybe the most powerful thing. And which is a decision. I'm choosing to not decide anything or to not choose anything. I'm choosing to not exercise agency. Now, just a thought that popped into my head about that, knowing how God feels about agency. I think that that is an offense to God. In me and my ramblings, not having really thought through it yet. But here he is, having given us the most important thing we can have, our ability to choose. And we give it up. We give it, either we put it down because we're afraid we might make the wrong decision.
Right.
Or we give it to somebody intentionally. And it could be a parent, could be a colleague, it could be a leader of any kind, religious or non-religious. I trust you to make better decisions than I can because I'm not capable. I think that would be trying not to get myself in trouble here, but but how disappointing would that be? God has created this wonderful masterpiece of us, and we're saying, well, I'm not good at doing things, so I'm going to let somebody else decide what I'm capable of.
So I'm going to yab at you.
Please do.
So I wish I could remember off the top.
That's why we talk, is because you can't remember off the top.
The stages of belief. I just listened to a podcast talking about it. It's not Fowler's. It's the other one where it's like simplicity, complexity, and then there's two more. Is that ringing a bell for you at all? I think sometimes if we're in simplicity, then which is a little bit maybe more black and white thinking or, you know, infantile. And I'm not criticizing or condemning in any way people who are in simplicity, because all stages of faith are have value, and we're in each stage of faith multiple times over our life.
True.
But that would speak to a time that maybe you are in simplicity.
Right.
And as you move out of simplicity, I'm trying to find the, then, and into whatever's after simplicity.
There's a complexity, and then it goes back to simplicity.
Well, there's four now. So I can't remember what the in-betweens are between simplicity and complexity. But then maybe that's not, doesn't work for us anymore. I think that maybe it's more about where your motivation is for not making the decision. Maybe you don't realize that there is a decision to be made. Okay. Maybe you don't even know that you have the authority to make that decision. Mm-hmm. Or it could be when the church was reorganized, or when the church was restored, mm-hmm. or the restoration began, the world, the US of A was in a period of religious fervor of hellfire and damnation.
Yes.
That's what people knew. It's impossible to not have had that leach into our own faith tradition, because we're humans.
It's part of every faith tradition at that time.
And that's just what anybody who was experiencing religion knew. They knew that pulpit pounding, hellfire and damnation. Mm-hmm. And so we do see leftovers of that. We see remnants of that even now in 2024.
Right.
And I mean, I've listened to conference talks where they're like, there was one, it was about a year and a half ago, and I don't remember who it was, but he was saying, you know, if you can you like, just, I don't feel like going to church today. I'm going to go on a hike in the mountains instead. Heavenly mm-hmm. Father, is that acceptable? And like, we already know the answer to that. So in that statement, like, I struggled with that talk. I was like, man, I'm feeling a lot of shame, you know, and Barry and I are having conversations about it. And he's like, well, he's not talking to you. And I was right. like, I need that reminder, right? Like, first of all, that not every talk is for us, but if we don't know that, or if we forget that, we might be hearing, you don't have the authority to make this decision. It was already made for you. You were baptized. You committed to attend all of your meetings. You committed to do this. You did this. You did this. You don't get to not do it no matter what. And our circumstances might change.
True.
You know, we maybe have a child that has a disability. And so maybe attending the temple becomes much more difficult than it was prior. Maybe even impossible. Maybe you can't afford to get a babysitter, or you can't find somebody that's going to, you know, tend to that child. So I think fear comes into it. And then also, like, we hear culturally, and there's a lot of really good things about our church culture, but there's also not as great things. Like, mm-hmm. people leave the church because they're lazy and they want to sin, right? And so maybe you're questioning yourself, like, well, is it because I'm being lazy? Is it because I would rather just do this other thing? And mm-hmm. so sometimes when we have this top-down approach to living our religion, we forget that it's not a one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And when we take ourselves out of the mindset of a one size fits all, it gives us a lot of freedom and flexibility to make choices and have our own, exercise our personal authority. When we believe that we're in a one size fits all, we've like put blinders on. I don't know how to say it.
Yes.
And we're full circle.
Are we full circle, though?
I have no idea.
I need to start writing down notes as you're talking so that I can remember what I want to push back on your pushback. So, but a couple of things that you brought up that have been not just on my mind, but part of coaching sessions that I've had recently have been about that you talked about, we may not know that we don't need permission, or we may have forgotten that we don't need permission. And this was a significant topic. I've talked to several people, including members of my family, about this, that if you're making decisions based on the decision was already made. Now, I want to be clear. I think there are some things that the decision was already made. So as an example, I have been married for 33 years, almost 34. Next month, it'll be 34 years. And sometimes I miss a decade. I think 24. No, it's been 34. 24. Allison's turning 30 this weekend. It's been 34 years. And I have made a decision that I will remain faithful to Marcin. I am going to remain faithful. I've made that decision. So that's not a decision I have to make every day.
Right.
But you talked about circumstances change. She has an aunt and uncle who are not members of the church. And they were traveling through Indianapolis and they wanted to get together with us for lunch. We said, great, Friday afternoon. Perfect. Friday afternoon, that works out well. I work every other week at the temple. That Friday, I'm not at the temple. Excellent. We're going to get together for them on Friday. Then their plans changed because they had some issues. They're moving from one house to another house. They're moving from their winter house to their summer house. Just to be
my dream.
So they're snowbirds, and so they were traveling from the south towards the north. And they had some maintenance issues that had to be taken care of before they could leave. So now it's not going to be Friday. It's going to be Saturday. Okay, cool. That's going to be fine. Well, the maintenance issues took a little bit longer. So now it's not going to be Saturday. It's going to be Sunday. So we had a discussion. What do we do? Should we just invite them over? And knowing what we know about aunt and uncle and the experiences that we've had and just everything. For the last lots of years that Marcin's been their niece, there are things that she knows about them, what they're going to be comfortable doing, what they're going to be comfortable with, et cetera. Plus, there's convenience getting on and off the highway going from south to north. And we made the decision that it would not be unacceptable for us to have lunch at a restaurant on Sunday afternoon. Now, conveniently, or maybe not, Edison was called into work at a restaurant, which would have been convenient to their entry and exit from the highway, or exit and entry, and was about 5 minutes from the cemetery where her brother was buried. And they wanted to go visit the grave. So was that the right decision, wrong decision? I'm not going to, you can argue with me, but we had a wonderful lunch and an even more wonderful visit with aunt and uncle. So I think that sometimes forgetting that we have, and in full transparency, I did not pray about that.
Gasp.
I told Marcin that I think that it would be, I said, think about the experience that they will have if we say, yes, let's meet at a restaurant, compared to if we say no. Our religious belief is we're not going to, and this is what our options are, and we'll make you peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at our house. Because that's all we would have time to do, because we had ward conference on Sunday and we didn't have time to go make a big meal. And so, right or wrong, that was the decision that we made. So I'm not saying that it's okay to sin. I'm not even suggesting that I would call what we did a sin or not a sin. It's just
I was gonna say something.
When we travel, we were traveling to visit Carissa for her graduation, and we were traveling home on Sunday. And I get really hungry sometimes on Sunday. This was Fast Sunday. Shh, don't tell anybody. And so I had a protein shake for breakfast, and I think we grabbed something at the airport for lunch. And so I did not fast on that Sunday. We did spend money on that Sunday. And I didn't pray about that either. So I think a lot of times when we assume that the decision's already been made because an authority figure made a decision or gave advice, I think the counsel to keep the Sabbath day holy is valid counsel. But if I'm called into work, which I set my own schedule now, so I don't work on Sundays. But if I'm called into work, then am I risking my employment? If I refuse by saying, the prophet said I should keep the Sabbath day holy, be what about those nurses that are caring for our sick family members on Sunday, or the first responders, et cetera? So I'm going to pause. So if you have anything you want to add, and if not, I'm going to try and bring it back to something that I started with.
Well, I think one thing that you were saying was, and this is something that Jesus did. So I've been listening to some of Andy Stanley's sermons, and he talked about how ecclesia, which is a word that's been translated to mean church, could also be translated as movement. And I've actually decided that I like the term Jesus movement rather than, like, Jesus's movement has been restored rather than Jesus's church has been restored.
There's a richness to that that is just really neat.
So much. And then it really just focuses on what did Jesus do? What was his movement? Mm-hmm. What was his thing that he did? And he chose people over policy every time.
Yes.
So when you went to lunch with family, you chose people over policy.
So the Spirit just testified that that was the right choice.
Is that the truth?
I'm going to throw a little spiritual manipulation in there. You can't argue with the Spirit.
Cannot argue with the Spirit. But I think that's what Jesus did. That was a big thing that in Jesus's movement was choosing people over policy. Policy exists for a reason. When we have a huge organization, there has to be some sort of order and structure. But when policy gets chosen over people, I think that's where it gets problematic. And I think sometimes that's when, like, I've seen in my own life, like, I have let policy become more important than people. I'm going to reclaim my own authority to say people are more important than this or that or whatever. Kurt Frankum talks about in his new book, which is absolutely phenomenal, Is God Disappointed in Me?
Spoiler alert, the answer is no.
The answer is big fat no. About love and behaviors, right? Like we overly fixate on behaviors.
If we can just get them on a mission, if we can just get them to go to seminary, if we can just get them to go to Mutual, if we can just get them to go to church, if we can just,
Or like, in I'm doing all the things, right? Like I'm reading my scriptures, I'm saying my prayers, I'm attending my meetings, and I'm not getting this thing that I've been told I will transactionally. And I think when we look at people over policy, we lose that transactional nature that sometimes comes with the culture in having, you know, this policy of like the if then, right? If you do this, then you will get this. And so back to your original question of how can I know the truth? I think, is there truth?
I think the answer is yes and no.
The way we talk about truth and looking for the truth, is there? Because I'm going to say no. Because if I say yes, I feel like there has to be a one-size-fits-all approach. And I just know there is not a one-size-fits-all approach to Jesus's movement.
So is your request about, is there truth? Are we talking policy, or are we talking something else?
I don't know, because that was your question at the beginning, is how can I know the truth?
I'm so glad you brought this back to the beginning, because I was going to anyways, but... So here's my take on that. There are doctrinal truths. There are truths, and this is, I'm going to go based on my belief, and you can argue with me. And I have a cat who's
cooperating
with me. No. One truth: God loves his children, without exception.
Yes,
that's a truth that I believe. Another truth, the gospel of Jesus Christ was restored. That's the truth. So, and I can list a lot of truths. The sun is out today. That's the truth.
Depending on where you are, it's kind of cloudy at my house.
Not true. Not true for you. It's true for me. No. So, but that, I think that is a good segue into the no part of, is there truth? You've referenced in the past the sculpture. And is it a Paris museum?
Yeah, I think it's been removed. It's actually, I think, on the streets in Paris.
Okay.
But yeah.
So from one perspective, you see elephants, other perspective, you see giraffes, and it's a single sculpture that shows both. There's a comic that I've seen where there are two people standing across from each other, looking at a number on the ground. It's painted on the ground. One guy says it's a six. The other one says, no, it's a nine. And so you can argue that, and you're looking at a perspective. So is there truth? Yes. Is that a six or nine? Yes. The situation that I vaguely referenced earlier, is there, do I want to know the truth? My answer to that is, so if I go back to, and I cannot remove my coaching experience from my non-coaching experience, more often than Marcin once. So if I look at truth as a circumstance, truth would be something that is, I'll call it capital T true. It's absolute. It's final. It's indisputable. Is there truth in the world? Absolutely. Absolutely there is. But it is, I think, a lot less common than what we imagine it is. So take anything. Is, I'll just use an example from my work life. I'll call a person that I used to work with, we'll just call him Phil, because I don't know any Phils in my current circles. So is Phil a jerk? Now for me, that may be true. And for Phil's wife, absolutely not. So I think a lot of times we're looking for truth where there's capital T truth, where there's only perspective, there's only experience, there's only observation. And so my answer to that is I will never know the truth, capital T truth in some of these cases. I will never know. Is Phil really a jerk? My perspective is always going to say yes, and there are always going to be people who disagree. So that cannot be a truth. And there are a lot of ways that I could take that, meaning a lot of different examples that I could give. I'm not sure that it's valuable getting into a lot of them. But an example I've used in the past, I don't remember if it's on the podcast, but Promised Land chocolate milk, the most amazing. It's like drinking a candy bar.
That's true.
And so, but if my kids start talking about Dean's chocolate milk versus Promised Land, and somebody comes, some idiot, I don't know who would think Dean's is better than Promised Land, but if they come up and they talk about Dean's is better, no, absolutely not. And it doesn't matter how much we argue over, was it really Dean's that's better, or really Promised Land? And what about, we're siblings, we grew up in the same house, we had the same parents-ish. they were much nicer to you than they were to me.
False.
But I could go back and say, do you remember the time that Dad took us to the lake? Or can you remember the time that we did this vacation trip? And maybe I do. And maybe, wasn't Dad such a jerk on that trip? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Dad was not a jerk on that trip. I remember he let me drive. I know, exactly. That's my point. He let you drive.
That's terrifying.
So, but my point is that there is always going to be stuff that we may be tempted to argue about. What is truth? What is true? And you could pray about it. Was Dad really a jerk? And maybe I don't remember that part about him letting me drive. I don't think he ever let me drive. I had to sleep in the back of the car the whole trip. And it doesn't. So does, and I'm trying to think how to wrap this up. So does my perspective of the truth that Promised Land is better, or that Dad should have let me drive or shouldn't have let me drive or whatever, does any of that matter to anybody else? My answer to that is no. It may matter, but should it matter? Maybe that's my better question. Should it matter to somebody else? And the answer is no.
But man, we want it to matter to somebody else.
Because Promised Land is better.
So you're not wrong there. And I've also never cut Dean, so.
Why would you? No, I've had, I think I've had Dean's. We have a local dairy out here, Oberweis, which is.
I have heard of Oberweis.
It's okay. I was in Idaho.
I just heard of it. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just heard
it. Not as good. But and I can't remember the brand in Idaho, but Idaho does potatoes. And so they had, it's a thick chocolate milk because it's been thickened with potato flakes. Why? Why would you waste chocolate milk with potato? Why would you waste potatoes on chocolate milk?
Here's a fun fact. I learned that the brand Orida mm-hmm. is called Orida because the plant Oregon? Is on the, it, but the plant is right, sits on that Oregon-Idaho border.
Well, that makes sense.
We passed it one time. That's and crazy. I was like, that's why it's called Orida. Huh?
So I don't know if I don't know if I answered any questions. If I raised new questions, I don't know if anybody even cares, but
I care. And you gave me something really good to think about. And as soon as I remember what it was, I'm going to tell you because we should talk about it. And how to do it.
That'll be part two.
It'll be part two. Yeah.
So, but the thing that I would say is that there are a lot of times that we argue over things that because I think something's true and you're not, or you don't, or you think something's true and I don't. And the thing is, I'm never going to know. There's no way to know unless there's some, and even sometimes when there's verifiable evidence of the sun being out, I can go out, I can look out there right now. I can see shadows. The sun is obviously out. There still are going to be those people that dispute.
Yeah, because
that.
We all are having a different lived experience.
Right.
Even though we're in the same, you know, religious organization. Really quick, and then I'll be done, okay. Maybe. Christmas time, mm-hmm. all my kids came home, and it was interesting because we were probably in the low to mid-50s temperature-wise, sunny most days. Mm-hmm. And Barry was wearing short-sleeve shirts and jeans, and he was really comfortable.
Because that's nice weather in the wintertime for Virginia.
It is nice weather in the wintertime for where we live, but it was still like I was cold. So I would wear jeans and a sweatshirt and then I was fine. Mm-hmm. I was comfortable at jeans and a sweatshirt. Now my kids that have been living in Idaho were complaining because I was keeping the house at a ridiculous temperature of 68 degrees.
That's horrible.
And they were sweating and they were walking around the house, the exact same house that Barry's wearing short sleeves and I'm wearing a sweatshirt in, barefoot in his shorts. And then my California kids are asking for more space heaters because they're freezing cold at 50 degrees and the house being below 70. And so here we all, we're all in the exact same house. Right. We're all in the exact same temperature, but we're experiencing it differently because of our lived experience. Our lived experience is different. And there was nothing that they could have said to make me believe it was hot or it was cold. Right. And there was nothing I could have said or done to make them believe it was comfortable if you just put a sweatshirt on.
Yeah.
And so just respecting that, right?
So, but you could pray about it. Is it hot? I would say some of that stuff just doesn't even matter. So, yeah. So I don't know if we fully addressed either of the...
We're doing a part two. I'm already cool. Just feeling really...
I like it. So if you remember what it is that you're thinking about with truth, we'll continue next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. Please like, share, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas, and you can reach out to me at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider... Who do you know who needs chocolate cake?